Always good to have Laura Tingle along when we're talking federal politics. She joins us again. She's the political editor of the Australian Financial Review. Laura, thank you very much for joining us once more.
Hi, Wally.
Now, we're winding down towards the end of the year, and it seems to me that politics is beginning to get, well, a little dried up, frankly. But there are a few issues that won't go away, which is, I guess, what you're left with at a time like this. And one of those is the government's... Are we still calling it a promise that it will deliver a surplus? I'm a bit confused as to what the status of it is.
Right. Well, it's all a question of reading very carefully what they're saying here. What the government is saying is that the appropriate fiscal policy, that is budget setting, for an economy growing at the trend rate is to have the budget in surplus or, you know, thereabouts. Now, what that gives them wriggle room on is that the economy has started to not grow at trend rate. That we've had the first signs of those in last week's national accounts. And so I suppose what's happening now is the government's sort of clearing the ground to dump the surplus commitment, which is the way I describe it, at some time between now and the budget. My indications from within the government are that that'll probably happen at the next set of national accounts, which will be released in March. But it's one of those things, Waleed, the business community and the economists who are usually the ones saying there should be a surplus, cut more, cut more. They've all been saying for some months, look, this is getting ridiculous. The economy is slowing down, which is why interest rates are being cut. It's ridiculous to keep this commitment to a surplus through all of this slowing economy. You know, can we have a slightly more realistic conversation? And the current indications are that you will end up with a surplus if things go as people currently think, of between $4 and $7 billion, which sort of sounds a lot, but in an economy that's at $1 trillion big, it's not actually a huge difference to have a $1 billion surplus and a $4 billion deficit.
Yeah, that's right. I've just got this feeling that the government will figure out a way to deliver it, even if it needs to privatise the Department of Foreign Affairs or something in order to do it.
I think they've already done that.
But speaking of realistic statements, the opposition frontbencher Christopher Pyne has come out today and said that if the Coalition were in government, the budget would always have been in surplus, global financial crisis notwithstanding.
Yes. They talk about the silly season, Waleed, and Christopher Pyne has sort of come out and encapsulated it pretty well. The opposition has got away with making these sort of really sort of out there statements for much of the last couple of years in particular, and nobody's been really paying attention. But Christopher Pyne just went that one step too far today, and there wasn't a lot of other noise around, so everybody suddenly started to focus on it and saying, well, Mr. Pyne, that doesn't actually make sense. I mean, there is continuing controversy about the government's stimulus package to ward off the global financial crisis. I think you've got to say that we didn't have a global financial crisis hitting our everyday lives here in Australia, and a lot of that was due to the stimulus. But even if there hadn't been a stimulus, what happened as a result of the global financial crisis was that company profits were hit very hard, and there was a collapse in the revenue base, which the government and Treasury calculates cumulatively between the beginning of the global financial crisis and now is having cost about $160 billion to the budget bottom line. So even if the government hadn't done any stimulating of the economy, we would still have been in deficit. And it's a bit twee to be suggesting otherwise. And the opposition's starting to change its tack on the budget and on a range of other issues. Now it's sort of making these very simple statements like saying, oh, we're going into deficit because the government's spending so much money sending asylum seekers home. Now, this is particularly doubly rich given that what the government's doing is essentially coalition policy a lot of the time on asylum seekers now.
Well, and so, offshore processing has been known to be expensive for a very long time. It's not as though there's a surprise in that. But presumably the opposition is saying that they would somehow do this cheaper. I don't know. They'd have deals with the relevant countries or something.
Well, they're saying that they would do it cheaper, that they would they would sort of have more patrols along the Indonesian waterways. But they're also saying that they'd send everybody back from Sri Lanka, which presumably would cost more. So, I mean, but it, that their suggestions on asylum seekers are pretty sort of shallow in terms of their impact on the budget. I think they still have a really big job to do to explain how they're going to finance their spending commitments and how they're actually going to get the budget into surplus, and indeed why they should get the budget into surplus, given that most people think that given the softness of the economy, you probably shouldn't be insisting that it go into surplus at the moment.
Well, the surplus is an article of faith for both sides of politics now, particularly the coalition side. Presumably they'll just find whatever cuts they need, $161 billion over however many years it was. And and I suppose the starting point for that is the public service. That's at least what we're being told.
Well, the public service is always a really good one to talk about, Waleed, because everybody likes to hate, you know, fat cats and all those sorts of phrases, and public servants aren't supposed to be people that, you know, who are real people or any of those things. But the sorts of cuts that you can get out of the public service are just not anywhere near sustainable enough or not large enough to sort of deal with the sorts of black holes that the coalition has for itself. In addition to the existing problem of the federal budget, the coalition's made commitments to cut taxes further with the mining tax and the carbon tax. Plus, it's talking about a lot of extra spending commitments, which it's already locked into, which it hasn't said how it's going to fund. So they've got, you know, problems above and beyond those ones that that Labor is facing at the moment.
The government does have some problems, though. There's something caught my eye today. It was an essential poll which showed that the Prime Minister's net disapproval rating is going up. It's gone up by 8 points. So that's approval minus disapproval. She's in the negative. But also, and this is the two-party preferred vote seems to be stretching out in the coalition's favour again, 54 to 46. But the thing that really caught my eye was the polling on electricity prices. Mm. And this just shows, I think, that the government seems to be dealing, on this issue at least, with an electorate that doesn't actually understand the issue, because 45% of voters are blaming power companies, but then a huge swag of voters blame the federal government for this, even though it's a state issue. Only 16% of voters think state governments are responsible for this.
Yeah, and this will sound like a free promo, Waleed, but this is the sort of issue I was talking about in my quarterly essay in the middle of the year, that people don't really understand, as you say, how these things work. There is we've deregulated markets and products like electricity, but we haven't actually ever said, oh, you know, we've done this and governments can no longer affect how your electricity prices are struck as they once could. So we've now seen with the Council of Australian Governments meeting last week, all of the politicians at both levels trying to find a way of looking like they're having some influence on electricity prices altogether, all over again. And as you say, it's now becoming a federal government problem when, in fact, they don't have any say over it at all. And I suppose that goes to one of those cost of living things. The Labor Party in the 2007 election campaign really embraced that whole cost of living issue. At that stage, it was about fuel prices and grocery prices. When they really made that the centrepiece of their campaign, they really bought into the whole sort of nightmare that is state politics on a whole range of fronts. And people just don't understand who does what and who should do what. Everything becomes a federal government issue. But I think In a broader way, I think those essential figures for the Prime Minister and for the two-party preferred vote are going to be of concern to the Labor Party, because essential does averages of its numbers, so it tends not to swing around so violently. So if they're recording a big change in the two-party preferred vote and better Prime Minister figures, that sort of indicates that there's a bit of a move on away from the government, which probably will surprise a lot of MPs, who probably felt that the Prime Minister had closed down a lot of issues at the end of the year and had ended up on a reasonably good footing.
Well, perhaps it just shows that the momentum the government has is stopped, that it's got as far back as it was going to get. We're going to have to see, of course, election year coming up. I look forward to the Electricity Watch website that will no doubt be announced at some point as we head towards that election. Laura, thank you very much for speaking to us again, and I hope to do so again soon.
Thanks, Waleed.
Laura Tingle, political editor of the Australian Financial Review. You're on RN Drive with Waleed Ali right through till 8 o'clock this evening.